Hey everyone, welcome to the 291st episode of the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and your co-host,
Kevin Toefel.
And we have an excellent show for you today. We're going to be talking about Google and its Nest Secure thing. Nanoleaf has some new products, and we're excited about them and some secret stuff in the background. We've got new smart speakers, a new Raspberry Pi module, plus Microsoft has a new open source project for edge computing. ARM has a new edge processor for machine learning. And I've been playing with the Amazon Echo devices, and I will tell you what I think about them. Plus, little updates from Google for their smart displays, an update on that Ring mailbox sensor we were so excited about, smart blinds, and exploding lights. No, they're not exploding, but you should take them back. Plus, this week's guest is Manolo Arana, who is GM of Amazon's Sidewalk Network. So we're going to be learning all about Sidewalk. It's going to be fun. Plus, we're going to hear from our sponsor, Silicon Labs, talking about the myriad wireless protocols out there in the world. So before we kick off the show, let us hear from another one of our sponsors. This week's sponsor is Very, and we are talking about the best of the smart home awards that they are putting on. So, are you ready to win validation, recognition, and visibility for your smart home product? You should apply now for the Best of the Smart Home Awards at bestofthesmarthome.com. This is going to get your product in the hands of judges like me and Rob Tiffany, who is the VP of IoT Strategy at Ericsson. And this closes December 4th. I went through to the page and checked out the application form. It's pretty simple. So there is no reason at all for you not to fill it out, because at the end of it, I will be able to play with your super cool device. So go to thebestofthesmarthome.com and apply today. Okay, Kevin. This week, The Verge reported that Google is canceling its Nest Secure alarm system. And yeah, that was a pricey alarm system. It was like $500, which is, when it came out, super weird, because we had really good alarm systems from like Abode and SimpliSafe and Ring and so many other companies.
It was expensive. And you're right that that was kind of a crowded segment already. But it was interesting because of the different sensors in the house, as well as the NFC key fobs, which I like the idea of. I never bought one of these, thankfully. I mean, it's still going to work, just so we can be clear. Google is discontinuing it. You can't buy it anymore, but they are still supporting it.
That is true. I should have said that way. And my hunch is this probably has a little to do with the ADT deal. I don't think this was like going gangbusters, and then with the ADT deal, it makes sense for this to be discontinued.
Yeah, and again, since it will continue to work, I think anybody who has one shouldn't be all that upset. I you know, it's not like it's going to be a brick, but it kind of speaks to the bigger issue of two bigger issues. One is, how committed is Google? You know, people worry about, what is Google going to cancel next? You know, and again, you're right, this probably has to do with ADT. So maybe we shouldn't be surprised. But then there's an even bigger issue about the industry at large of, how disposable is IoT getting, and so on.
Pretty disposable. That's the answer.
Yeah. Which is not good.
No, it's not good, because we have piles and piles of devices that don't work usually. But let's say you want to buy more. Nanoleaf, one of my favorite products of all time, even though it is only art, it is not really utilitarian. So I have to caveat that. But they have launched new shapes and a new line of cheap colored light bulbs. So Nanoleaf, last year, I think it was, launched shapes. And prior to this, Nanoleaf made a triangles product that was called the Nanoleaf Aurora. Then they, a couple years after that, made the Nanoleaf Canvas, which were squares that were touch sensitive. So you could touch them to trigger things. Pretty cool. And then most recently, they introduced shapes, which are hexagons. And the idea behind shapes, they said, was like, from now until the end of time, any future things we release will work with the shapes. So this is the future-proof version? I don't know. So shapes, the newest versions are big triangles and little triangles. And they, I'm like, I don't know what to say.
They match up nicely with the sides of the hexagons. So you can connect the small triangles to those hexagons. You can then put the big triangles next to the little triangles in a hexagon. It's a very nice looking product that you can configure any way you want. But as you said, it's definitely not utilitarian.
No, and they're expensive. So yes, the Shapes starter kit is going to run you $200, and you get 9 shapes?
I think you get 7 triangles of the big triangles.
I'm talking about the Shapes hexagon. Look at this. This is difficult. But if you want the triangle starter kit, you do. You get 7 triangles, and that is $200. If you want the minis, the starter kit with the power supply and everything, plus the rhythm module, that is $120. And then I don't see expansion packs yet for those, but...
Yeah, I mean, it could be because at this point, it's a brand new product and they'll just have that come later. They probably want to put the inventory towards starter packs.
That makes sense. I mean, actually, it doesn't, because if you have the hexagons already and you want to buy the shapes, you're like, oh, first I need to buy the starter pack, which doesn't make any sense. So you're buying something you don't really need. Anyway, that's just me. The point about these things is if you have someone in your life that you really want to spoil, these are a lot of fun. I mean, we have them creating like, we call it art. It's on our art wall. I have the triangles and they create enough light to read by, but I do have 15 of them and you have to be right next to it on the white setting. So these are not really like a super light replacement. They're more for ambiance, but it's pretty cool ambiance.
Yeah. And to be honest, I actually did just find expansion packs for triangles.
Oh, good. Okay.
$69.99 for 3 triangles.
Dang.
Yeah.
All right. That's a lot. But, you know, my triangles, which they're $60 for 3. So it's a little pricier, but not much. And my triangles are like forever years old. Okay. The other thing that I think is interesting about Nanoleaf is it's kind of a relaunch because they had had these bulbs for a while. And then they stopped selling them or emphasizing them, and they were white and not colored. But they are selling colored light bulbs for $20 and a light strip. So these are going to compete with LifeX lights, Philips Hue lights, and they're much cheaper. And they use thread. And this was very exciting to me because I'm on the lookout for thread in new places, because last week we talked about, you know, the HomePod Mini getting thread in it. And we think that's probably because you're going to see thread as part of the Connected Home over IP project. Or Project Connected Home over IP standard. So yay, these might be forward compatible with that.
As exciting as the thread is, I'm looking at this bulb. It's an A19 bulb, and that's a great price. I can't get over the fact that the bulb is not round. It's like a dodecahedron or something. I don't know why it bothers me. It looks like a crystal.
You hate it. Yeah, he said it looked like a D&D die.
Yeah, it does. Just put numbers on it. And
I think some people like it. It's like the original Nanoleaf lights, they actually were mini decadecahedrons, whatever it was. But they also had like little perforations in them, and they were very pretty. And I think they were copper. They were very neat light bulbs, I thought. They're definitely different.
They are that, yes.
So I get you. Let's talk about smart speakers, shall we? Enough about light bulbs. Let's talk about smart speakers.
Yes, there's a new one that was just announced earlier this week at an Acer event. Acer, like as in the computer people, it's their Acer Halo smart speaker. It is powered by the Google Assistant. It will cost $109 when it becomes available in the first quarter of 2021. It's actually kind of nice looking. It's a little boxy, but it has rounded corners. And instead of standing on a long, wide base, it's kind of like the box is standing up. So it's taller rather than it is broader. It also has an LED colored base. And that actually doesn't surprise me, because a lot of what Acer does with its gaming laptops is RGB, all the things. So that doesn't surprise me. But additionally, you can see the time, weather, and temperature on the face of this, which is kind of nice. One last thing, it's another one of those speakers, I guess like the Nest Audio, that's kind of meant to be potentially used in the center of a room, because when you ask the Halo smart speaker to play music, it's going to project sound in like 360 degrees because it supports digital theater system sound. So we haven't heard it yet, but it sounds kind of neat.
Yeah, and we'll talk about speakers later again in the podcast when I review the fourth generation Echo. which is also designed to sit in the center of the room. But yeah, they don't usually live there, so I don't know.
No.
Okay, and let's talk about the latest and greatest on the Raspberry Pi front. Kevin?
We talk about Raspberry Pis a lot because they're so versatile and you can do connect sensors to them and run all kinds of little projects. And people are probably more familiar with the consumer versions, just the Raspberry Pi Model 3 or Model 4. Every time Raspberry Pi comes out with one of those, they also follow up with what they call a compute module I/O board. And that's what they've done. This is a compute module 4 I/O board. So it's, I would say it's a slimmed down version of the Raspberry Pi 4, along with more connectors for people who are going to create actual products, not do projects like I would do. This would be more of a prototyping type board that you could use to create your own IoT device and then sell it to the masses. It starts at $25, so still low cost. It comes in like 32 variants because you want Wi-Fi, do you not want Wi-Fi? You want 1 gig, 2 gig, 4 gig, 8 gig of RAM, etc. So there's a bunch of options there and the pricing will go up accordingly. But basically this is a great prototyping board that's now available.
Nice. Yes, we love prototyping boards here. And I bet most of our audience has some sort of Pi sitting around, not an actual Pi. Although, good for y'all if y'all have Pi. We all love it. Let's talk about Kubernetes. Microsoft is open sourcing a project that will bring Kubernetes to the edge. And for those of y'all who are listening because you're smart home people, you may be like, Kuber what? Kubernetes is a container management program. It is also open source. And the idea is you put your software in containers to make it so you can actually have your software run the same in the cloud as it can like on a phone or an edge device. And so you pop your software in a container. I'm not going to get into all the technical stuff, but the general gist is it goes in a container. You can run it anywhere. And it's very handy for managing things that are highly distributed, like the IoT. So what Microsoft has done is they have created a project. They're sharing something called, I'm going to say it's Acri, but it might be Acri. And it lets you manage your containers at the edge. And this is going to be super handy for all of those IoT devices at the edge. There are also other companies that do this. They just aren't open sourcing it. So there's companies like Balena.io. They actually do this. I feel like Ubuntu probably has something. And
that would not surprise me at all.
Yeah. So this is just handy for people who are thinking about edge devices. So yay, go Microsoft. That's available to you. Also at the edge, ARM has a new machine learning processor for the edge. They have unveiled the Ethos U65. This is an accelerator. It's one of their like tiny neural processing units. And you're going to run this with, you know, your Cortex-M, which are the microcontrollers, and the Cortex-A, which are the super fat, smart IP designs that are used in phones and laptops and Lord only knows what else now. And yeah, it's just a new design that's out there. And it is for bringing machine learning to the edge. So yay.
It's tiny.
It is tiny.
Like 0.6 square millimeters.
Yes, it's supposed to be fabricated at 16 nanometers, which is tiny also. Mm-hmm. So small, but not the bleeding edge. So yeah, there's just an update there. Okay, let's talk about smart speakers. I feel like we have been drowning in smart speakers this last month.
Yeah, it's peak smart speaker right now.
Exactly. First, we had the Nest Audio, and that was a $99 smart speaker for Google. This isn't a display, it's just a speaker. And then Amazon was like, aha, I will offer you a $99 fourth generation Amazon Echo, which is now shaped like a bowling ball or just a ball. We'll just call it a ball, smaller than a bowling ball. And they also announced the fourth generation Echo Dot. And then last week, Apple was like, I too will have a $99 smart speaker. And they announced the HomePod Mini.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have the HomePod Mini because we have to wait till November 6th to order it. And then we have to wait for that to come to us. But I do have the Nest Audio and the Amazon Echo. What's it called? I'm getting overwhelmed here. The Amazon Echo and Echo Dot with clock. So first, the Amazon Echo. This device is bigger than I thought it would be, actually. Kevin, you said it was smaller than you thought it would be.
Well, for $99, I didn't expect it to be like the size of a volleyball. And Stacey actually put it next to a volleyball to show me that it's smaller than the volleyball. You said it's more like
Bocce ball?
A bocce ball. Yeah.
I was struggling. I was like, what ball is this size? It's bigger than a softball, smaller than a volleyball. So as speakers go, this is super nice. It is designed to sit in the middle of the room, but it has the bass. It brings the bass, but not in an obtrusive way. Like, remember, I think last week or the week before, I had the Echo Studio and I was like, too much bass, super muddy on all the trebles and highs. This one is much better. It's a good mid-length speaker. And the bass is, it's still a little muddy when you get into kind of higher pitches and things like that, but it's not as bad as the Echo Studio. The bass is toned down enough, but it is still significant enough, like the counter that I have it sitting on, that thing is bumping. So if you had two of these in a room, I think it would be super powerful. I think your choice, and not, we don't have this, the HomePod. So between the Nest Audio and the Amazon Echo, I mean, one, it's going to depend on what ecosystem you're already in.
Right.
So that's first up. But the Nest Audio still does better, I think, with like maybe popular music, maybe classical music. The bass is sorely lacking on that when you listen to it next to the Echo. But it is much clearer. The music is much clearer. It's much better defined. And I'm not an audiophile, so I'm not using the right words possibly, but both are good speakers. Both are not going to fill a big room with sound, but you can pair both in stereo and fill the room with sound.
You could do home audio with all of these if you bought multiples as well.
And compared to the older generation, so I was running a first generation Echo, this thing sounds amazing. Just, and I like the fact that the ring lights up all the way around the bottom, which is nice. You can see Google's is designed, again, to sit against something. So there's only a display saying that Google heard you on the front. I do think this one is a little less responsive. Madam A does not hear me as easily on this one, which I thought was kind of a little bit bizarre.
That has the new, is it the AZ1 processor in it?
It does. It has the AZ1 processor, and it has, I think, more microphones. So I'm a little surprised by it, but such is life. Such is life. Maybe my house is super loud. I don't know. That's that. I would say, should you buy it if you've got older, like the first generation? Yes, you should totally upgrade. It's worth it. It sounds better. It sounds better. That's really the reason you would do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that speaker is like 6 years old now, or 5 years old, depending on when you got it. So yeah, mine was getting a little weird. It would stop in the middle of playback. So I was like, And then the Echo Dot with clock. I was hoping to replace my Sony Dream Machine from like the late 90s that acts as my clock radio. We only use this thing to like look at it in the middle of the night. We use the Echo for our alarm. I mean, literally all it is a clock that we can see.
Oh, so no 8-track player in that?
No 8-track player in that.
Okay.
The late 90s. Come on, man. Come on. So the Echo Dot with clock is small. From a volume perspective, it is way less. I mean, it is tiny. It sounds fine. It's nothing to write home about. I wouldn't listen to music. Like, I don't like it for music in my bedroom anyway. I feel like I would need another speaker for music in my bedroom.
I could see that. I mean, the dots are fine, but they're not ideal for music, in my opinion. They're great for getting that digital assistant response. But after that, yeah.
I mean, I like laying on my bed and listening to music or folding clothes to music. So this is not the device for my bedroom, I don't think. And the clock, it's dim. So I was worried that the LEDs were going to be too bright, but they're not. But they're only an inch or just shy of an inch tall. And we have ours on a dresser across from our bed. And I'm old, man. I have bad vision anyway. I wear glasses. So I could not see this.
It would have to be on a nightstand like right next to your bed from many people, I think.
Yeah. So it's not a bad device. It's just not the device for me. And that is the one with clock, the Echo Dot with clock is $59.99. And then the normal Echo Dot is $49.99. So there you go. That is the Echo universe. So let's go back to Google, because in small news bits, we've got Google adding new smart display features.
Yes, I have not actually received these yet, but Google did say they're rolling out updates to their Google Assistant-powered smart displays. There is going to be a new dark mode, which I like. I like to dark mode all the things, so that's good. They have a new visual layout that's going to include a home control page, which right now I kind of have to pull down like a little shade and then navigate through what room I want and so on. So I'm looking forward to that. Stacey, you should be very happy with this. All of your accounts in one place. So if you have separate personal and work accounts, you can set up multiple accounts on Google Assistant devices for your events, meetings, and so on without switching.
Wait. Does this mean as a G Suite user, I can see my calendar now on my display?
Well, I think so, because they don't mention G Suite, but they do mention the new Google Workspace, which is only for G Suite people.
Sign me up.
Well, actually, you do have to sign up to the Google Assistant beta program. Yes.
I'll get on that. Okay. Anything else on that front?
There's a sunrise alarm. So the screen brightness will actually start increasing 30 minutes before your alarm goes off to mimic the sunrise, which is kind of nice.
I'm really sensitive to the light. So I'm
I'm sure it's optional. I don't think you need to.
Google's not going to force me to wake up 30 minutes earlier.
You could go back to that old dream machine.
Oh, the dream machine is staying for now. We'll have to see. Do not knock the Sony dream machine. It's the best device I own. No, that is not true. Okay, smart blinds. Let's talk about them because I've been meaning to tell y'all about this and I'm so sorry because I'm only telling you now and the project is going away on Friday morning. So basically, if you listen to the show on Thursday, check out the Rise Kickstarter. That is RYSE. And I am sorry, I've known about this and I kept forgetting to tell you. And there's a company called Axis and they're in Canada. And they launched the first generation of their smart blinds. This is a way to motorize your existing corded window shades. So this is if you have a cords with that are made of metal with the little dots.
I do. Okay. I just call it a cord.
Yeah. So the metal cords that have the little dots and then a string cord, this will control both of those. And they had a first generation and it was lovely. But now they're on the second generation. This guy has... plug it in. It can be solar powered and it's nice. It basically lets you use the shades you have if you have a cord. And who doesn't want to do that, right?
I want to do that, but I don't have cords on my shades because I don't like cords.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of people don't know. If you're in an older house, this is a good retrofit for you.
Agreed.
And they're not going to ship until next July. So July 2021, but you can order now. And they've already manufactured a product before, so I feel confident that they can do it again. And yeah, I don't know what else to say about these. Oh, some of them will be in August 2021. So if you're interested in this, you may want to just wait and then check back in the summer. But this is coming and it's exciting and I've seen it at CES and it works. And it's about $300 for a starter pack. That was the thing. And that gets you two smart shade things, two battery packs, and a smart bridge.
Not bad.
It's not bad. I mean... again, massive window shades are just a pain. Massive windows are not a pain, but they can be expensive to cover. Okay, let's see. What else do we have here?
Oh, we've got a bit of a recall.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I remember I tested, I think it was the Philips Hue Lily spotlights maybe two-ish years ago, maybe one, which I really like them. However, the Philips Hue 40-watt outdoor power supply units for... not just the Lily, but the Lily XL, their Cala pedestal lights, their Impress pedestal lights, and their Econic pedestal lights could be damaged due to water leakage, which is not good in an outdoor PSU. So there is a website where you can get replacements for your PSUs. You will need a 4-digit production code on your power supply units. You will get these for free. You definitely want to do this if you have Philips Hue outdoor lights.
Because what happens if they get wet?
I would imagine they will short out.
And not work. Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's also safety. I mean, you just don't want water and electricity playing together.
Nope. Most of us don't. Okay. And leading into our guest, who is going to talk to us about Sidewalk Labs, I feel like we should have a conversation about that Ring mailbox sensor. Because there's a lot of misinformation going around and we had a lot of questions. So if y'all recall, back in September when Amazon launched all their stuff, one of the products they didn't talk about, but they quietly launched, was a mailbox sensor that would tell you if your mailbox was open and closed. And we talked about it working on Sidewalk, but it doesn't work on Sidewalk. Not yet, anyway. The theory is it will work on Sidewalk eventually, but for today, if you purchase it, and it won't come out until November 12th, but you can pre-order it, this sensor, which is $29.99, needs to work with the Ring Bridge, which is $49.99. So if you want to have your mailbox sensor tell you when your mail has arrived, you need to buy the sensor and a Ring Bridge. And that Ring Bridge also controls their smart lighting, cameras, sensors, all of that. So it is not using Sidewalk today. So everybody out there who wants a mailbox sensor, price on this is really going to run you $80 because you got to get both things. And you're going to have another hub. If you already have a Ring Bridge, then you are only out $30 and you're already using that bridge. So yay. So I wanted to make that real clear to people because I think we didn't the first time.
It wasn't clear from the press release, and there was a lot of talk about all of your Echo devices are Sidewalk bridges and so on. So there was no clarification that this will not work with a Sidewalk bridge at this time.
Yes. And, you know, Amazon's not saying anything, but I suspect it will eventually work as a Sidewalk bridge, but not today. And you'll hear more about Sidewalk in just a few minutes when we have Manolo Urbana, the GM of Amazon's Sidewalk network, here to talk to us. So before we do that, though, it is time for the Internet of Things podcast hotline. And this month, we are giving away a smart speaker. So if you get to us with your questions before the 31st, which is Halloween, Saturday, and the day before daylight savings time changes, all of those things happened, you will be entered to win your choice of a smart speaker. Right now, we have the Nest Audio or the fourth generation Echo. I suppose if you wanted to wait, we could order you a HomePod.
A HomePod Mini, sure.
Sure. Sure.
Why not?
Take a smart speaker. If you want the HomePod, though, you'll have to wait because it's not out yet. Anyway, all of that is available to you if you call us and leave us a question. And I really recommend you call us and leave us a question because, one, we like to hear from you, but two, you have really good odds. This month, your odds of winning are really good so far. This may change things. Anyway, so if you want to call us and enter to win or leave a question or both, you should call us at 512-623-7424. That's 512-623-7424. And say hi. All right. This week's question is from Mark. How to deal with the end of life of a device is an increasingly common question. So let's hear Mark's question.
Hello, Stacey and Kevin. This is Mark from Pennsylvania. I have a question for you. I've got a couple of Harman Kardon Invoke Bluetooth speakers that I'm going to lose Cortana on here shortly. And I was wondering if there was a way to have an Echo Dot connect in stereo to two Bluetooth speakers so that I can play the music back in stereo. I've been trying to find out whether or not I can do that. I can't really figure that out. If you could look into it, it would be greatly appreciated.
So yet another device that's losing functionality, which we talked about earlier in the show. It's kind of a bummer.
We're going full circle on this show.
Didn't plan it that way, but no, it's a good question. I'm sure Mark is not the only person who has Harman Kardon Invoke speakers, which apparently are very nice sounding speakers. So I get why he wants to do what he wants to do, even though he's losing Cortana. So can he?
Yes, maybe.
We don't have Harman Kardon Invoke speakers to test this with. However, we do know that, and we did test this, you can pair another Bluetooth speaker to an Echo Dot.
And have the talk to the Echo Dot, but have the Dot's responses go through a Bluetooth connected speaker.
Along with the music, which is what you would want when you have nicer speakers than the Dot.
Yes. Now, unsure about stereo pairing on the Invoke. So if you have it stereo paired, I'm not sure how they're doing that. So you can't pair your Echo Dot to two devices, right? You can only pair it to one. And then the other thing is we couldn't test this even if we had Invokes because Microsoft isn't sending out the software update that will convert your Invokes to Bluetooth speakers until January of next year.
Right.
So hang in there. In January of next year, you need to do the firmware update from Harman Kardon that will turn the Invokes into Bluetooth speakers. Plus, you need to do this before the middle of next year because they're saying, and they's Harman Kardon says that you need to do the firmware update within 6 months of its release. So keep those suckers plugged in, update your software, Once you've done that, I would recommend creating a stereo pair, and then you can go to your Echo device, and what you'll do is you'll go into your Madam A app, you'll go into the device itself that you want to pair, and then you'll go to Bluetooth, and at some point in time in that process, you should also turn your invokes into pairing mode. Your Echo in the Echo app, it will find it, and it'll be like, do you want a pair? And you'll be like, of course I want a pair. And then you shall have paired.
Besides not forgetting to upgrade the firmware in a timely fashion, don't forget that Microsoft is giving $50 gift cards for each Harman Kardon Invoke speaker that you have. So Mark has two. He can go to the FAQ site for Harman Kardon and apply for those.
Yeah. Get you $100, Mark. All right. So Mark, hope that helps. Feel free to call us back in January or whenever you do your update and let us know if this actually worked. I really hope it does.
It should at least work with one.
Yeah.
It really should.
So that's maybe not the best, but it's something. All right. That concludes this portion of the show, but please stay tuned for our guest segment where you'll learn all about Sidewalk. And now let's hear from our sponsor, Silicon Labs. Hey everyone, we are taking a quick break from the Internet of Things podcast for a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is Silicon Labs, and I have Jake Alamat here, who is Vice President of Home and Consumer at Silicon Labs. Jake, how are you doing today?
Very well, thanks, Stacey.
Awesome. All right, so let's get this started by having you tell us a little bit about Silicon Labs.
Thanks, Stacey. At Silicon Labs, we're the number one provider of silicon software and solutions to drive a smarter, more connected world. Our technology helps to shape the future of the Internet of Things and drive that market forward and can be found in products all across the spectrum, many that you can find in your own home.
That is probably true. So there are over 100 wireless protocols in the smart home devices that we're using today. And that is a really big challenge for device makers and consumers when it comes to interoperability and the user experience. So what are your thoughts on that?
Thanks, Stacey. Yeah, there are many different RF protocols used in the market today, and for many valid reasons, for range, for security, to support legacy equipment, for safety, and the list goes on. Ultimately, consumers don't really care about the protocol. They want their products to add value to their lives, be simple to use, and work seamlessly with other products in their homes. At Silicon Labs, we work to simplify this complexity in two ways, right? One, we work with device makers, providing them a simplified and robust multi-protocol wireless platform, enabling them to work across a wide variety of standards with one code base. And the second major thing we do is we directly engage with standards bodies and ecosystem creators to influence the technology and market direction, helping to solve customers' pain points and drive simplicity. At Silicon Labs, we support all the major wireless protocols and are actively participating in the largest smart home ecosystems. By partnering with customers and ecosystems, Silicon Labs is working to ensure the smart home products being developed today can work within any ecosystem.
That sounds awesome. So where can I go to find out more about Silicon Labs and your work there?
Yep, you can find out more at our website at silabs.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and today's guest is Manolo Arana, who is GM of Amazon's Sidewalk effort. Hello, Manolo. How are you today?
Well, hello, Stacey. Very nice to talk with you and be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. Thank you for coming. We are so excited. We have been excited since, last September when y'all talked about Sidewalk for the first time. And now that it's actually kind of coming out into the world, where we want to know how it works. So let's kick it off by explaining for everybody out there who may not be aware what the goal is with Sidewalk. Why is Amazon doing this?
Stacey, we want for the product to work better. So we designed the network to make the customers' devices just operate, work, stay, be more reliable, work at your home or beyond your front door. So when you think today, the customers rely on Wi-Fi connections for things like live streaming videos at home, or you use cellular to deliver the data over long distances. So you can question, it's like, what happens when your self-coverage is spotty, your Wi-Fi goes down, maybe your ISP service actually has a problem, downtime. And we all can think about examples, you know, things like actually when the network goes off, everything online, offline. So Sidewalk fills that middle ground of that really helps devices in and around your home at no additional cost to the customers.
Okay, so it's both longer range, wide area network for low bandwidth stuff, and it's also kind of a nice backup. So maybe my Ring alarm doesn't need to have like a cellular backup, because so when my internet goes down, I still get notifications over this network.
Yeah, that would be an example of what you can use to reduce as a developer, as a device maker also. What can I do to simplify my product, not just the development, but also the cost that we pass down to the customer, no? So think that in terms of just connection, when you have a light at the edge of your property and it's definitely outside of your Wi-Fi range, how would you connect to it? And therefore, you're going to install a bridge, right? So you want to find alternatives that actually they are going to be not just cost-effective for your development, but also for your customers to just easily connect it and have it always in range and service. So you're right. I mean, you have the capabilities to do long range, to do actually in shortened range, but it's just the alternative. It's just make sure that you have always something that you can rely on to make your product work better.
And so generally how this works is I will have a Sidewalk capable gateway device. So that is like my Amazon Echo 4, the Ring devices that y'all talked about. And then I'm going to have an endpoint device, and then that's going to hop on my Wi-Fi network to get back to the internet. So that's the broad idea here. But now, as a consumer who's very deeply interested in this, I have lots of questions. So, and this is a mesh. Let's talk about why develop your own. There are tons of existing LPWAN networks out there. There are probably too many. Plus, there's like things like cellular NB-IoT. So let's talk about why y'all decided, you know what? We need another low power WAN out there.
So yeah, so that's a great question, Stacey. The when you're thinking about 15.4 implementations on the Mac, is that, I mean, Sidewalk is not coming orthogonal to any of this. I mean, the objective is to have a system that is able to coexist with current applications or allow the application developers to actually work on top of it. And again, as we mentioned before, in other outlet, if you have a Z-Wave or ZigBee application that you feel strongly about it, I mean, you should just be using the genetic data pipeline, I mean, to be able to connect to internet. So just think about Sidewalk as a transport in this case, that it gives you additional capabilities. Now, specifically when you think about LoRaWAN or any other successful technologies that are in the market, I mean, we are not coming in opposition to. And in fact, we love some of the concepts and actually what they implemented and brought to production. But think of for us, we prioritize privacy and security. And that was actually the tenet of actually what the network is. That was the host. We didn't look only at what it is the technology running on the device or on the endpoint or even on the gateway, but it's also the entire solution that encompasses endpoint, gateway, backend services, et cetera. So all that chain. So it is, we try to resolve that larger problem that today is not addressed. I mean, when you think about the level of encryptions that we have, those are actually very carefully designed to limit the amount of data that one component needs to, and they're going to be minimized. You will not be able to know, Amazon won't be able to know the real, what even the message is, what is the gateway that it is connected to, when it was. I mean, we actually have this very carefully designed. And we didn't see that the existing technologies were specifically addressing this. Now, again, they are very successful doing what they are serving. We are not going to be against that. We are looking at more of be a complement and offer them that connectivity. And definitely roaming was not supported, for example.
We will get to security and privacy in a minute.
But okay, great.
You did mention two things. You mentioned Zigbee, Z-Wave, and you also mentioned 802.15.4. Is your radio layer 802.15.4, which is the basis for Zigbee, basis for Thread, all of that? Is that the radio that y'all are using?
No, it is. It is using our own Mac.
Okay.
That's right.
Your own Mac. Okay. And it's been so long since I've dealt with the OSI stack. I'm so excited, y'all. All right. So now let's go quickly to that idea.
By the way, Stacey, if you think about why we did it, I mean, in terms of their own Mac. So if you noticed on the recent announcements, we actually spoke about supporting Bluetooth and FSK. How do you do something like that in a radio that is consumer grade, that it has a single channel, these are not very sophisticated enterprise grade gateways. How are you able to actually support two different kind of modulations completely in parallel, right? And simultaneous. And we wanted to do this because for us, it was important to offer the opportunity to additional silicon providers. We want to give choices to the device makers in terms of what solution they can choose. So we couldn't actually stay, or we didn't see a solution that it was able to support so many radios or be an umbrella of radios that eventually can grow the ecosystem and give possibilities to everyone that wants to be part of. So that was the other big aspect that drove the need to have a specific Mac so we would be able to share the time and the logic behind how you use the different radios that you have in the system.
So then you're using Bluetooth and the Sidewalk protocol.
So yeah, so when you think about Bluetooth or Sidewalk, there is a Sidewalk look at as an umbrella of communication possibilities, right? So when you think about having like Bluetooth or whether the modulation, for example, it would be via FSK or via LoRa, at the end they're going to be using the same data model, the same model in terms of data security, etc. So you would see it this way. That's how it will be their hierarchy.
Got it. Okay, so as part of the announcement last month, y'all announced obviously the support for Bluetooth, which you've mentioned. There's your own particular Mac. And then there's also, you did a deal or a partnership, I believe, with Semtech for LoRa. And I'm curious how, as a developer who might be working or deciding between protocols, how I should think about Sidewalk working with all of those things, or maybe not working with all of those things. How do those work together or relate?
The first thing is, as a developer, is to find the target. What is actually what you're trying to resolve? What is the range, for example, that you need? Perhaps think about that your product is going to be primarily being in your home, in your premises. It's not going to need like half a mile, a mile type of range. That actually is going to be somewhere near, maybe within a quarter of a mile. Just think about what is the radius, what is the functionality of that product, right? Based on that, you should choose the technology. So for example, you wouldn't pick for that Bluetooth, right? You would go with something that is either, it's going to be over the 900, so gives you that extra distance. But then you have to choose, do you want to go with FSK or go with LoRa? As you mentioned, we actually were, we have Semtech chips on our gateways, but you as a device maker, you may choose that actually you want to have FSK, or that you may want to actually work with Texas Instruments or Scilabs and onboard some of their parts. And they will work in the same way with these gateways, but that would serve you. And you need to think about the price point, the hardware design that you want to target. And again, that goes into the principle that Sidewalk is made to be open, to give choices to the device makers. I mean, it's just like you'd rather stay with one technology because that is serving your needs. Great. We should not just dictate what maker or what technology you should be using.
Having an interoperable low-power WAN would be amazing. So as a consumer who might be like, what just happened? He just talked about a lot of things. If I see like a LoRa sensor, my hunch is it's not going to work on Sidewalk. I should be looking for a Sidewalk sensor if I want it to work on Sidewalk. Yes?
And the way to view this is the security credentials. You could actually manufacture, you will have an existing system, if you think of that, that is using LoRa. At the end, we are using the same chipset, if you think for an endpoint. So what are the credentials that you have on that device that it guarantees that the device is what it says it is, so the network can trust you? And how do you set up a session? How do you allow the device to actually connect with the network? And if you don't meet those credentials, you just basically will be rejected from the network out right away. So that needs to be remembered, the different layers of encryption and how things actually, that's the fundamental piece. The first thing is to trust who is that that endpoint that is talking. Yeah, it's less so of a difference of the actual hardware, but it's more about, are you who it says it is? Do I recognize you? Yes, you are who it is. Okay, then you can talk.
Okay, so it sounds like we need to talk about security. So let's mm-hmm. go there. You've mentioned encryption. You've actually mentioned authentication of the hardware. So Let's talk about like a lot of security for IoT devices. We think about things like having a secure enclave on the device and the gateway. We think about encryption both on the device and then in transit. So talk to me about how y'all have handled security for Sidewalk as a developer. I mean, as a consumer, I don't think many consumers are like, oh yes, this has AES 256 encryption. I'm on it. I think they're just like, oh, secure. But as a developer, what do I need to put into my devices to make sure my device can work on this network? And
yeah, I love the question. So Stacey, think of once we actually release the SDK, we're going to have the instructions specific on how you would be able to onboard a device and make it a Sidewalk enabled device. No, so that is going to be easy. But if you think of the route, we are going with the guiding principle that any information that it is used to manage the network is not exposed to other components. So we actually have created a separation between the different parts that are involved managing the network or communicating, right? With the endpoint in a way that no one knows about the other. So at the end, you cannot figure out who it was. This, it was your customer's device. Who is this customer? Well, I don't know. I mean, I know that it was located in some location, that it was a Sidewalk gateway, but actually I have no more information. I don't know anything else. Did the endpoint know what gateway was connected to? It didn't either. So we are separating these. So all of this is described in a white paper that it is available to all the developers. And it goes in great detail into the three level of encryption. But that is the fundamental piece for us.
Okay, so no deep packet inspection on the Sidewalk network is what I'm hearing.
Oh, yeah, no way. About it. I mean, let's go with an example. Imagine that you're a developer, Stacey, and you're creating an air quality sensor. So imagine that, just look at where we are today. I mean, how difficult it is to get actually real-time, reliable information about what is the air quality around you, no? So let's imagine that you open your app and you say, I want to see what is the air quality at a given location. It says, okay, so you actually create a message. You say, like, give me that reading. That endpoint is going to respond you back with what is exactly the measurement. Amazon is not going to be able to know what it was sent, what it was asked. The only thing that it knew is that a mobile application, it was requesting this sensor something. Then in addition, what it happens on the network is that you obviously need to find out, where is that sensor? How do I connect to? So you need to have some level of understanding. What is the gateway associated to that? So that is what we disassociate that information entirely. We actually know that this is gateway that is maybe located in your home, Stacey, or maybe it could be actually up in the mountain. You don't know. We actually know that there is an ID for that gateway, but we don't know how you connect it. All of this is independent to the application layer. You don't know actually what happened there. So the network is going to think, it's just like, oh, that device, which is, it has an alias that is not associated to your account. I just know that it's authorized to talk with Sidewalk. It knows that it is in this location, and I'll be able to send a message to. But then I cannot recompose from there where it was exactly, who was the owner of that device, who was the owner of the gateway. I just know that I was delivering a message. And in addition, I'm deleting that information every 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
So we actually lost all the track of it.
Okay. No, that's great. That helps with the people who are very concerned, like Amazon's going to see all this extra data by running this network, so that you don't actually.
Actually, we don't. That was something that developers, I mean, everyone that it was part of the program from the beginning, we knew that the guiding principle is privacy and security. We need to do our best to do that state of the art. And by the way, it was a great fun thing to do, because imagine how much innovation we were able to build on top to get this level of sophistication in the network. Think about serial numbers of devices, those they continuously rotate.
Sure.
We don't have those static. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I like it. Okay. So as a consumer, I know that, you know, I just buy the devices and I have this connectivity. So I don't think about it, which is great because I hate paying for subscriptions. As a developer, how should I think about pricing on this network or to have access to this network on my devices? Am I just buying the physical hardware and it connects, or?
It is free. I mean, the only thing that you need it is to be within range, that someone has a gateway that you can connect to. So
I need to put the radio on my device too.
You will have to do the, if you're creating the device, let's say that the example before, let's say that you're creating that sensor for air quality. Yeah, you will have to get a radio that from any of the vendors, the partners, whether it's, for example, if it is for very long range, you may want to go at that moment with Semtech. If it is within less than a quarter of a mile or Semtech is closer to what that gateway is going to be, maybe you want to use at that moment apart from TI or Scilabs. You will need that. You need always that transceiver that is running the stack, is executing those applications. But there is not additional cost. So essentially, it's the same that it would cost you if you could be doing your product not connected to Sidewalk.
And when should I expect to see devices, like endpoint devices, become available?
That's going to depend on the 3Ps. We are going to be announcing in the next months the availability of the SDK. So just assume it's later. We are planning for actually later this year. From that moment, once you have an SDK, it will depend on the velocity that these device makers will be able to do. But at that moment, you'll be able to provision a device. We'll have the tools for it, being able to be recognized on the network and use it. So hopefully very, very soon.
Okay. And to get everybody excited about it, let's end with some amazing future use cases. So if I and my neighbors, we all have the Sidewalk, if it becomes fairly ubiquitous, what can we do with it?
Well, first of all, is what can you do? How does it help? You know, if you think about this, Stacey, of your device, it could be your camera, it could be anything. Let's say actually as a device owner that actually you lose your connectivity, but you want to check that things are fine. So that one is those use cases are going to be something that obviously doesn't exist. I mean, since your device shows offline, and guess what? Actually, you're going to be able to maybe remotely bring it back into the network, or you will be able to have customer support to be able to help you to bring that device online or find what's wrong with it. Imagine the number of applications that you can do on top of that. I mean, what can you do actually when you do connect with a small bandwidth? So we need to be smart about it, but you can bring those devices back online. And then think about what you do for the community. Something that we are working in a pilot is with the American Red Cross. So they needed to go and have a better way to track their blood donation. And we got in this pilot with them, which basically we were providing the engineering resources, the hardware, the support. And that was just to recognize when the boxes were leaving one site and arriving to another, right? So it was good for tracking those assets. And that is something that it was fantastic, but it's actually leading into what can we do when actually there is emergency situations, when you can help to track, think of keep an inventory of your assets. Actually, you have deployed maybe into areas that actually don't have any kind of connectivity, maybe that they're affected by maybe after hurricanes or things like that. That we can help the community, and you can just do it. I mean, by just sharing a little bit of your bandwidth. And think about the green applications. Something that for us is always on the back on our minds is the climate pledge. Think about you are enabling a technology that now at no extra cost actually at all. You can have systems that they can be on battery with maybe a coin cell that you can have water moisture sensors for your garden, and they can last 5 years with it. And it helped us to save water, to save energy. I mean, we opened the door for all these inventors to just do something with it. And we are only scratching the surface of IoT, you know, what we can do with it. So I think that the inventors are going to be able to see with that a possibility, lower cost effectively. It's just like, do more with it. It is really exciting to think about what our partners and are going to be able to think about and leverage the network to and bring it back to making great products for you as a customer, but also to the community and the rest of the world and make it a better place.
I look forward to my Sidewalk-powered moisture sensors because I have yet to master the watered garden. Final, I know I said that was the final question. This is a really easy question. How small does the bandwidth need to be?
First of all, think about a message. You know? So this is going to be on the few bytes, so a few dozens of bytes that you're sending in a message. We also have optimized the number of messages that are required. So make it optimal so you don't require certain level of access. So effectively, you reduce the number of traffic that is on the air. In terms of if you could be an owner of a gateway in Sidewalk, you expect it's going to be 80 kilobit per second. That would be a peak that you would see. So it's really tiny, it's on the noise. And then we also added a cap monthly. So it's going to be at the 500 megabytes. If any gateway uses more traffic than that, we will just take it off the network. We will pause it.
So half a gigabyte a month for one device?
No, that would be for anything that you would support.
Manolo, thanks so much for coming on the show this week. I really appreciate it.
That's very nice. And I'm sure that we'll have opportunities to talk about more applications and exciting things in the future. Thanks for staying tuned.
That's it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, if you'd like more IoT news, sign up for my newsletter at stacyoniot.com. We'll see you next week.